Yo. So, you know, maybe you'll disagree, but I think you're going to like what this school in Texas has done.
Okay.
It's pretty incredible. And some of the things, like one of the first things I thought was, well, I wonder how expensive it was, because that would mean, you know, I probably can't get it done other places. But this school, this campus was built, they said, according to ABC affiliate down there, they said it costs $100 million less than a new standalone high school. Okay. So it's not like it costs a bunch of extra money. This school looks like a mall. Well, and there it is, a mall. They're calling it a mall in a lot of the stories. They're calling it the OC, which stands for the Opportunity Center.
Okay.
But when you go into the OC as a student, there are classrooms in there that look, you know, kind of like regular classrooms. They look nice. Kind of look like a really nice college, right. I would imagine. But it's also a mall, like a functioning mall. And there's a florist. There's a coffee shop. There's these different stores within this mall. So when I was a kid in elementary school, we did a thing called Exchange City. And I know Snowcone did it, too, where you go to this fake little city and you learn what it's like to have a job and you work for a day and you apply for the job and all that. But that was like in fifth grade. These are high school kids, and they will go to their classes, and then they will actually go to their job. So they'll go do a job as a barista, right? And the school's helping them to. The school's getting them this job, but they get job training, and they also get to do classes at the same time. So it's almost like a break. They do get paid. Snowcone, you were asking me earlier if they get paid. I found a much longer article.
I like it a lot.
Yeah, and it says that they do get paid. It doesn't talk about like an hourly wage, but I saw one of the girls who worked as a florist.
And you said it's open to the public. So
it's open to the public.
I can go in and get coffee.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, one of the things you might wonder, what about safety? Well, they only have two entrances to the school. They're both guarded, and they both have metal detectors, and they've got security guards. The students go through their own entrance, go in and out of their own door.
Perfect.
And that's just
a mechanic in there.
And yeah, there's a shop in there where they build stuff. There's a mechanic
in there.
Southern
Social Eatery?
Yeah, it looks like a
home decor and lighting, White Rhino coffee.
It's like you'll get an oil change and get a cup of coffee while I'm there.
Yeah, it looks like
does
a
mall. Does it cost to go there, do you know?
I think these people are paying. I think it looked to me in the video like they're handing over their card because they have the Visa machines there, whatever. People are ordering coffee, and then they're paying for
I'm sorry. Do you know what does it cost?
I don't know what the students pay.
There.
I cannot find anything that says that it's like a private school. They're talking about it as this new type of school, as if maybe it's a public school. If it's not a public school, it should be. Because they're saying that it costs $100 million less than a traditional standalone campus. Well, then why couldn't we do this with other schools? But they did say in one of these stories I found that other schools, superintendents from other districts around the country are on their way down there to start visiting this place and get a look at it to see if it's something that could be implemented where they're from.
But in Forney, Texas, the OC offers something special for both shoppers and students that you can't get anywhere else.
What does the OC stand for?
Yeah, Opportunity Central.
That opportunity comes in the form of real-world work experience for high schoolers. And in addition to that, this brand-new three-story building is open to the public every day of the week. It's part shopping mall, where you can get a haircut or manicure, an oil change, even grab a coffee.
When I walk up to order a taco,
right,
I could potentially have a student serve me.
I hope you do.
So there's over two dozen places, businesses, local businesses within this school or mall, whatever we want to call it. If you go up to the second and third floor, that's where the classrooms are. While the students are up there, of course, they'll learn their math and that stuff, but they also apply for jobs. It really is a lot like Exchange City from elementary school.
Well,
it's like,
it's like
taking that and mixing it with vocational training.
I love it. I think
but
it's
cool. With vocational training, at least at my school, and I assume your guys' was the same, if students wanted to go learn how to do HVAC or welding, they drove to a different campus, right?
Right.
They got permission by
Broadmoor in the Shawnee Mission School District.
Ours was in Raytown somewhere. I don't remember what the name of it was. But yeah, people called it Votech or whatever. Mm-hmm. You're going to go to Votech.
Mm-hmm.
This to me seems kind of like a mix of those things. You're taking that fun from elementary school with the, hey, I get to have a job and get to do all these things and pretend. No, you get to do it for real, and you get to do it while you're in school. I don't know if this is the answer to the trouble that some kids have learning in traditional settings, traditional school settings, but it sure seems like at least it's an attempt to do things completely differently. to know that you could go down there and work. We had a work release thing at my school, where but you just left school at a certain time that day, and you were done for the day, and you drove to your job. This is all on campus, and you're doing it with the help of your teachers and administrators. You're applying for the jobs while you're upstairs. You're learning this stuff at school, and it counts as going to school. Now, as far as the getting paid thing, the thing that I found was a girl who worked as a florist in the floral shop. She's a student, 17 years old. She said when they sell something, they get a commission. I think she said a 20% commission, okay, something like that. So it didn't sound like they got like an hourly wage.
Just want to make sure they're getting paid.
But it is school. You know, you are going to school. So I could see them saying, you know, we're not going to pay you. I wouldn't love that.
Well, they are paying them.
But yeah, right. They're paying them. So if she's getting a commission, then I assume people are getting tips.
That's all I want to make sure.
I assume people are getting tips at the coffee shop and things like that. And if you listen to these students, there's interviews with them on several different news websites that I found in several videos. Every kid they talk to talks about, man, I hated school. Now I'm excited to go to school. Like, I'm excited to come here.
I bet, right?
I have fun while I'm here. My friends are excited to come to school.
I can make some money.
We love it here. Yeah. I'm learning
how
to do something.
Plus, do things they want.
Exactly.
Right.
Instead of just talking about get ready for college,
mm-hmm,
you can learn how to do those things. And not everyone gets a job in high school.
Experience, you know? You put that on resume, right?
Right.
I would think so. It's a job.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for those kids in high school who don't get jobs, because there's plenty of them, and I don't know if that number's gone up or down, what the percentage of high school kids are that get jobs. But what if you're a high school kid and you're nervous about applying for a job? And it's like those kids who are scared to get their driver's license.
Sure.
They're like, I just don't need it. You could be nervous about something like that and go, I don't want to do it.
This could give you experience, right.
Yeah, and give you the confidence that you need. And especially,
and for your next job, you're like, oh, I know how this works.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not saying that going in there and learning how to be a barista, now you're set for life necessarily. But
it's a skill.
It's a skill that you need, exactly.
That you can use to survive.
To learn.
People survive doing it.
Yes, and to learn how to work, right?
Right.
And that's it. Well, I should have.
They teach retail, yeah, automotive, whatever.
I worded that poorly. I'm saying maybe it's not what you want to end up doing the rest of your life.
Sure.
But you still are learning. And for some of these kids, if you're learning how to be a mechanic or whatever, do oil changes, some of the stuff that they were building in this shop looked pretty serious. Those are real skills that could help you get a real job.
Or not only that, help you in life.
And for these kids to be excited to go in, it's a totally different campus. It's very open. When you walk in, the ground level is the mall.
I like it. Let's do it.
Why can't we do this? We never try anything anymore. And if they're saying that it costs $100 million less than a traditional standalone campus,
I wonder if the businesses pay rent.
Well, that's what I wonder. How much money goes to the district?
Like, yeah, how much? And if that offsets the cost of building this, because if you want to be a business, because you have a built-in client base.
And they're open 7 days a week.
Or is it like the school opening a coffee shop?
I think some of them are.
No, it looks like it's real businesses.
Local businesses is
what they said. Maybe they named them themselves, but it looked like.
The article says it's local businesses, over two dozen local businesses. So
that's cool.
I think that those businesses,
I imagine they pay rent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some of that money.
Good business plan for that school, honestly.
Must go to the school,
back
right?
Back to the school, I would think.
And
to some degree,
you know,
or maybe it went back to the building itself. Maybe that's why it's cheaper.
And maybe, so maybe the kids don't have to get minimum wage because they got this job through the school and whatever, and they only get tips. I can see some people being upset with that. I'm fine with that, though, because it is school.
Well, they also get
credits.
You're getting
credits for it.
Right,
exactly.
Sorry.
That's my thing. You're at school, you're getting credits
for it. You're
getting
experience, you're getting credit.
Yes.
Hopefully you get a little bit of money.
When you could just be sitting in a gray square room for an hour and a half before moving to another. And we've talked about how they need to change things for a long time, but I don't know exactly what that looks like.
Well, it doesn't matter. Who cares?
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering, how do colleges accept it?
Mm-hmm. How do they look at it?
Because they're still in the same. Like, what'd you get in AP history?
Yeah.
Well, you're not really offering AP history. I mean, maybe they are, but you're not offering all of the same workload and classes that other high schools are. Do they look at it as worse?
Well,
I don't know the answer to that, but
I do know they offer classes there that teach you how to run a business. Like actual, they make it sound like actual business classes, like the kind you would take in college.
Right, but I'm saying does.
So that could be good.
I'm not saying that's not good. I like the idea. I'm just curious, does, you know, the University of Kansas count that class as a business class? Or are they like, you're running a candle store, man, not the same thing.
Right. It sounds like,
and I don't know if it is. Like, you know, does that hurt your chances to go to a bigger university if that's what you want to do?
I didn't see anything about it not being accredited. And also, they do, if you're taking this business class, you do spend a lot of time in the classroom.
I get it. I was just curious if they look at the school differently.
Yeah. No,
they certainly look at Votech schools differently.
Well, yeah, I thought the point of OTEC was that you didn't want to go to college, right?
You decide later, like, hey, I want to learn about automotives.
Yeah.
But I also want to go to college. Like, I can do two things.
Right.
They're like, boy, those OTEC schools aren't going to count towards Yale.
Right.
Right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, boy.
I just wonder
if these are the same things. Like, oh, well, you know, hey, you did good in school, but that candle shop working, that's not going to count. That credit doesn't count.
I kind of wondered if this is like, you know, in other countries they have separate high schools. They might have, like in Germany, I know they have three different high schools.
They do?
Yeah, so based on your academics growing up, they decide what kind of school to put you in.
Really?
So there's like the Hauptschule, Realschule, and Gymnasium is what they're called, but it doesn't matter. The first level school is like, hey, we're going to probably teach you a trade. You're going to go here, and it's kind of like VOTEC is the way it's been explained.
It's like VOTEC, JUCO, and then...
The middle school is kind of like, we're still going to take classes, you might end up wanting to go to college, whatever, and then Gymnasium is like, you're a good student, and you want to go to college, and you're determined to get... Okay. A bachelor's or whatever. Some people say that's really bad because it discourages kids at a young age. Some people say it's really good.
Yeah, I feel like that's adults picking my future for me based on some sort of standardized test or the way that you perceive me as a human being. Yeah. I don't love that.
And I don't know exactly how it works. Like, if you go to the entry-level
school.
At that
age, like, what are we talking about?
Right.
But we all agree we need to change our school system.
Yeah, exactly. The ideas need to change. There needs to be... exciting, new, different changes.
Well, Independence now is doing the 4-day school week.
Well, but isn't partially that because of staff shortages?
Possibly.
That's what I've heard.
Like
but yeah, no, I mean, sure, 4 days.
When I was a kid, there's a school, we were like, wow, the school that's next to us do the 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off.
Oh, okay.
All year long. Yeah.
Wow.
2 weeks on, 2 weeks off.
Like that, you've always got something to look
trade
forward
for that?
To.
When back then, would you have traded for that?
You don't get your summer.
We thought about it. You know, during the wintertime, you're like, man, I wish I had 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
But during the summer, you see those kids going to school, you're like, ha-ha.
Right.
So, I don't think,
That was an option.
Depending on the type of the seat. No.
Okay.
So we're in a Livonia school district, and the Plymouth school district did that for a couple of years. I don't know if they still do it. They might have gotten rid of it.
Someone did it when I was a kid, but it wasn't our school. I didn't know who.
It was a school district. Like, if you dated a girl, you'd be like, what are you doing? She'd be like, I got to go to school. And you're like, it's summer.
Right.
Like, no.
What, did she flunk? No. This is how I do it. Yeah, having your whole summer feels like you're just so used to it, and you want to have that time off.
Such a great time for
But, man, knowing that every 2 weeks, like, you're about to get another long break. That's a tough decision. I might go with that one. But anyhow, this is something very different. At the very least, this is something very different. And
I always thought it was bad because they would talk about how in that 2 weeks they had to read and stay up to... So that when you got back, you didn't forget everything that you worked on.
Right.
So I was like, it sounds like in those 2 weeks you want me to read a book or something. They don't ask me to do crap over the summer.
That's true.
That's always been one of the big criticisms of having summers off, right? Is that the kids have to start over.
Right.
They get out of the headspace
of
learning.
But I think the same thing as 2 weeks. They're like, these kids come back and they forget how to do whatever.
That's true.
Well, mixing these businesses in with this campus and building this new place that just... part of it is that it looks nice.
And by the way, you're
like
trying something, let's applaud the effort.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
More Church of Laszlo on the way.
The Church of Laszlo on 98.9 The Rock.
Well, occasionally we do this segment on the program called Slim Fact, which usually involves me being up late one night and I'm bored and I get stoned and I start scrolling through news stories, looking at stuff online, and I find something that's kind of crazy and I go, oh my God, does everybody know this or not? I feel like I need to tell everybody this because this is crazy.
Fascinating.
It's fascinating. And
if you're high, you're going to love this.
Yeah, but I think even if you're not high. But yeah, if you're high, you'll definitely love it. But guess what? This was not mine. This is a cone fact. Because he brought it to my attention, and it is crazy. You know, we hear all these stories about how these companies are coming along and buying up artists' catalogs for a bunch of money, right?
Right, yeah.
And we go, wow, they spent like $2 billion, whatever. You go, okay, well, I guess, that song getting played in a Netflix movie must be worth a lot of money.
Like Bob Dylan sold his catalog for, I think, $300 million.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and you just see it all the time. You're like, man, there must be so much music in streaming. Well, Laszlo, there's so much more to it than that. The reason they're paying big money is because they're doing a ton of stuff behind the scenes. It all makes perfect sense, but I had no idea. And I think there's a chance you had no idea either. I'll tell you about it next.
The Church of Laszlo. The Church of Laszlo. On 98.9 The Rock.
All right, give me the slim fact.
So this is, I'm going to give Cone full credit for this because this was something that he found. It was pretty late at night, and he texted me and said, you have to read this.
Thank you.
And I looked at it, and I was like, oh, I'll read it later. Then he started telling me about it, and I was like, okay, I'm interested. I'm going to read this. It's from Bloomberg. The article's called The Business of Selling Out is Warping the Music Industry.
Okay.
Now, I'll just give you the very beginning of the article. It talks about Kurt Cobain dying in 1994. The ownership of his songs goes to Courtney Love, right? Okay. They say no one questioned whether the music would have a future because Smells Like Teen Spirit was massive, right? Defined a generation. In 2006, she sold those songs to Larry Metzel, a longtime record label executive, for a figure Rolling Stone reported was $50 million.
Okay.
So, you know, we're going back now almost 20 years.
Right.
3 months prior, Metzel had spun up Primary Wave Music Publishing LLC. That's a company that just basically acquires rights to music.
Right.
So we're not going to go into all the details about this, but I'll give you the things that are truly fascinating about this. These companies spend big money on this, and we've always thought, well, I guess they make good money when someone has to license it for a movie or whatever, and over time they're thinking they'll make that money back. They work a lot harder than that. So to give you one of the more interesting things from this article, possibly the single most interesting, was when you think about these music biopics, the Queen biopic, right? Freddie Mercury.
Right.
Elton
John.
Yeah, Elton John. Bob Marley. These biopics. These companies that have bought up the rights to these catalogs are making those movies. They are paying They are paying for those movies to be made. And the thing is, before that, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll say, all right, we've got a dead artist catalog. I think they use Tom Petty as an example, right? Mm-hmm. We've got Tom Petty's catalog. We paid a boatload of money for it. First thing we're going to do is give him a social media presence because Tom Petty wasn't big on social media.
Okay.
So it's this whole plan. We'll get him big on social media.
Is Tom Petty big on social media?
Well, that's why you see artists like Tom Petty on Instagram like putting out new reels. And you're like, why is this guy?
Like,
they pop up every now and then, and you're like, why does Queen, why are they putting out
where
new,
is this coming from?
You know, posts?
Okay. And it'll look like it's from their thing or whatever, and you're like, okay.
And it's an official account.
Yes, it's the official account. It's like when your friend passes away and their Facebook page keeps posting, like, who's
one,
doing that?
They all have one, yeah.
Yeah. So the companies start by doing that. They're like, let's get some social media going. That way, young people who are on Reels and TikTok will hear this music. They start getting interested in it. That gets the stream count going, right? Okay, now we're already generating some revenue because we've got people who are searching out this artist now and streaming their music. Now why don't we do something really crazy like make a movie? So they'll make a movie, a biopic, and they'll obviously fill it full of the songs that they own.
Sure.
And then they will watch that catalog explode after the movie comes out. These giant increases in spins and revenue that they get from that. So those are all things that you're like, that makes perfect sense.
Sure.
But I just never thought about it. When I see that they're doing a Bob Marley biopic, I don't think, the people who own the publishing for this music are funding this movie. I know they must have given the rights to use the music. I'm thinking they probably got a lot of money from this movie because someone paid for it, but it's actually the other way around.
They did it.
Yeah, they actually do the movie. So
it's in the article, it talks about Lucian Grange, who's CEO of Universal, was talking about how they're funding Bohemian Rhapsody. Like, they were funding that movie to get made because they own the rights to all the songs.
And then they make this money. Yeah, so then all that I thought was super interesting, but then we get
it's really kind of hand in hand.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because what Primary Wave does, and we have a friend who works there.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sounded familiar.
What they do is, you know, they also do for bands that are live or whatever, they get them in commercials, they own the publishing, and then they help you, you know, however they can.
Right.
To get, first off, your money that's owed to you, if people use it, radio stations play it, the streams, because that's hard to get.
Yeah.
And then they'll put it in, you know, a Dodge Ram commercial or something, you know.
Right.
Try to get that done for you.
So, correct me if I'm wrong.
So, it only makes sense then that they would be like, hey, we own all the Bob Marley stuff. We can just pay for the movie to get made.
Just make the movie.
Right.
But
you don't even have to make it. Are they saying they make it or they're just funding it?
They're funding it.
Right.
Yeah. Let's just pay for that.
It makes sense. I mean, I didn't think about it, but it makes complete sense.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're saying too is with these companies, at least some of them, if you manage, let's say you manage a band and you want that band to make money and you want to make money off that band, you will work with companies like this to help you get those songs into commercials. And then you split this revenue somehow.
They're basically just a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And so you sign a publishing deal with them. It could be whatever it is. You know, I'm guessing if you're a bigger band, it's different. But, you know, 50-50, you know, on anything we put your song in.
Okay. Now,
you know, and they own the publishing.
So that all makes sense.
You own 50% of it, and then you split it with your bandmates, however it is. So,
most people probably had a kind of basic idea that that's probably how it worked, or that is how it works. So this is, keep in mind, the title of this article talks about music selling out and how selling out is warping music. Well, I'm thinking so far, how are we warping music? So you made some biopics that I didn't know you funded. And
you created some
social media posts to try and get people to, you know, generate streams. I get that. But here's where it gets crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked a lot in the last couple years about these interpolations. These are songs where they're either heavily sampled or they're like almost cover songs, but they might change it a little bit. Like, I think
We just played one. We did the country artist who used Rebel Rebel by Bowie.
Exactly.
That's an interpolation.
It's the first time David Bowie had a number one song in country. A hit song
in
country. That's an interpolation because they're using the exact riff. They paid for it, the whole deal.
Yeah, it's songwriting credits.
I think an early example could be like Kid Rock All Summer Long. That would count as an interpolation.
Sure.
It's not a straight up cover, but it's sort of a cover, right?
Yeah.
So now we're seeing tons of these interpolations. We're also seeing quite a few covers, too, like Fast Car.
I mean,
there's been a couple.
Right now.
But Lazlo, the companies that own this music, they are the ones reaching out and saying, hey, we own, let's just say, for example, David Bowie. I don't know if that's how this one went down.
Right.
But saying, we own David Bowie's catalog.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you use his guitar riff for a country song? We think you'd have a big old hit on your
hands. Smart.
So they're the ones now...
They're
indirectly
artists.
Creating music or deciding what kind of music we hear because they're pitching this stuff to artists and saying, hey, this would be a hit for you. We own it. We know you want it, right? So why don't you do this interpolation? And that is why you're hearing so many of these interpolations, the pseudo cover songs.
They said between 2018 and 2022, interpolations on the top 100 in the Billboard rose by like 500%.
Yeah.
Like, you used to never really see them that much, and now they're exploding. They're everywhere now.
Right. If you looked at the Billboard Top 50 or Hot 100, in the past, there might have been one.
Yeah.
There might not have been one.
A lot of times in hip-hop, too.
Yeah, and in hip-hop, of course, and we thought of that a little different. We called it sampling, but it was still an interpolation a lot of times. Puff Daddy did a lot of interpolations, right?
Yep.
I'll Be Missing You was an interpolation.
That's an interpolation.
But if you start to look at recent years, and you go back and look at the Billboard Hot 100, you're almost guaranteed to find... more than one interpolation
loading right now
on that list because these artists are doing it. So you're hearing it because the companies that are buying it. So now you know, why would a company pay $2 billion for a music catalog? Because they're going to milk it. And they know how to. They're smart. They're not just buying it and then sitting back and waiting for the checks to roll in, which is what I assumed they were doing. That's not what they're doing. They are using that music. Yeah, and it's kind of... And there's a debate going on because... a lot of these artists are dead. So if you're telling someone, hey, you should interpolate Kurt Cobain's music, whatever, is that something he would have wanted? Probably not, right?
Yeah.
Well, some of them, maybe they would have cared. But somebody's older.
Well, I looked it up because I knew, because the people we worked with, they have four different brands inside of Primary Wave.
Okay.
So they have Primary Wave Music Publishing, and that is a private music publisher who started, they have a lot more now. They started with Kurt Cobain, we talked about, Aerosmith, John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
They bought those. Then they have a talent management company where they just manage bands, and they may or may not own their publishing. And that's Cypress Hill, CeeLo, Plain White Tees, the list goes on. Then they have the Brand Synergy Group. That's the lifestyle consulting company that connects brands with their artists.
Okay.
So it's a whole different division within the company.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have Brightshop Digital Marketing, which is a digital marketing agency that specializes in social, mobile, web, and streaming services. So they have four different brands doing four different things to just cover all these things at any point.
Yeah.
And a good example of that interpolation thing was the CEO of Primary Wave met with Lazlo's favorite artist of all time, Young Gravy, his manager and said, hey, we got the rights to Rick Astley now. We're going to have, can you have Young Gravy do a Never Gonna Give You Up?
This is pretty crazy.
And so his manager said, hey, you're going to do the song now. And so he used Never Gonna Give You Up. And
it made it sound like he wasn't like, yeah, I want to do that. It sounded like his manager's like,
you're
going to
do this.
Yeah.
And so they used it, and the song was huge. To the point where Rick Astley sued over it. And they're like, tough luck. We own your publishing.
Right. And what's crazy is because Rick Astley didn't write that song, right? Wasn't that the one where they said he didn't even write the song?
They bought the rights to Rick Astley, and then I'm sure they knew this before, but he didn't write that song. So they have to go find the songwriter and then buy his publishing.
Right.
So they bought Whitney Houston's first for like 50% stake for like $20 million or whatever. But she didn't write like three of her biggest hits. So they have to go find those artists and buy their catalogs.
Right. Yep.
Then once they get their catalogs, they can start using those songs.
And to give you an example of the biopics, they say they're even more lucrative than sync deals. They create, cumulatively over 3 years following the film's release, a 94% catalog streaming uplift.
Right.
So Lucian Grange, the CEO at Universal, mm-hmm. was on an earnings call investors in 2022. And on that earnings call, he explained why the company was doing biopics like Amy and Bohemian Rhapsody. They talk about after Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody came out in December of 22, mm-hmm. her catalog saw more than 2.2 billion streams over the course of 2023. And I remember that movie coming out and thinking, wait, they did a Whitney Houston biopic?
Right.
It just like came out of nowhere, and then it was in the theaters for a half a minute, and then it went streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, it used to be a big deal when a big musician had a biopic
right.
come out. I feel like we're being inundated with them right now to the point where I didn't even know this was coming. Yeah, all were just happening. And now we know why. You've got CEOs of labels on earnings calls saying, hey, here's why we're making these movies, because we're seeing a 94% streaming uplift after we do it. You know, again, Whitney Houston getting 2.2 billion streams the year after that movie came out. And that movie wasn't necessarily a hit,
right?
Yeah. But it goes to theaters, and then it goes to streaming.
And if you
then
think
that's
about it, with the music labels now not making as nearly as much money as they used
this
to.
This is how they're
figuring out ways to do it.
And that, to me, is the thing. Like, wow, all we've heard for years is, boy, the labels are shrinking. What are they going to do? They don't sell physical records anymore. There's just not as much money in it.
Well, there isn't, though. I mean, if you look at it.
No, there still isn't. Yeah.
But, I mean, like, now, look at these people who are making it as primary waves. They're opposed. And on any of those divisions, it did not say we're a record company.
Well, right.
We are not a record company.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
You got Universal.
Record companies saw that happening and now jump in, like Universal's doing.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Universal doing the biopics. But, yeah, they're finding ways to make money. And so now every time I hear a country guy doing a David Bowie song or Young Gravy doing Rick Astley or whatever it is, or Fast Cars by some country guy I never heard of, I'm going to think somebody essentially paid you to do this.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, they really get paid for this.
You believe this shit?
The Church of Laszlo.
Amen, brother.
98.9 The Rock.
Yo!
Yo. For people who don't know, Laszlo is not an overly sentimental man.
I don't know why would you say that?
Well, I mean, you're not...
Don't paint me in a corner.
Well, I'm trying to be fair here. I didn't think that you'd have any issue with this portrayal.
I don't,
you know. That you are not the kind of person who cries at movies. When Steve Irwin died and everyone was so upset, the Crocodile Hunter.
Okay.
And everyone was so upset. See, that's the response, right?
Was everyone upset?
Okay. Yeah, people were upset.
People cried.
Some people cried. I cried.
People who didn't. You cried when Steve Irwin died. You never met him.
A little bit. I know. It's crazy, right? But people do cry sometimes when celebrities die.
So when you say I'm not sentimental, you could just say I'm not a bitch.
A bitch, right. That's what I should have said. Laszlo, for people who don't know, he's not a bitch.
Yeah.
And he doesn't cry about people who he's never met.
I'm emotionally healthy.
Because they don't care about you. They don't pay your rent, so why do you care about them?
That's right.
But there has to have been some celebrities, some musicians who have died, athletes who have died over the years where you felt something like,
yeah, sure,
man.
I feel bad sometimes.
Right. Well, I thought this was interesting. They put their...
Weep.
Well, I didn't weep when Irwin died, but I went downstairs and my friend was there and he goes, hey, Steve Irwin died. And I was like, what? He goes, I know. And then I could tell he was a little bit emotional and I got a little bit emotional. I also had a bit of a opioid problem at the time, so that could have played into it. I'm not sure, but I remember being quite upset.
Whatever, man.
Anyhow, I thought this was interesting. They put together the most culturally significant deaths of the decade of each decade. And I'm curious, coming up here, you can tell me, there has to be someone that you were a little bit upset about. It could have even been someone that surprised you that you wouldn't have thought you would have been upset about, but you were. But celebrity death news that kind of hits you harder than the others. I would like to know what that is, if there was one. And then I'll tell you what they say were the most significant celebrity deaths culturally for every decade. You probably guessed some of them, but I also think that the ones that affected you the most might not be on these lists. I just assume that you like, there's athletes that you might have really liked growing up, things like that. I don't know. Look, you're not a bitch. I get it. I'm not saying you wept.
I just haven't wept at anybody. Yeah,
Not saying you wept. I'm saying there's one where you went, Bowie was like, oh my God. I think everybody had this kind of like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Prince.
David Bowie died.
No, I didn't.
He wasn't upset about that, but he did get into an argument about how he was better than Michael Jackson.
Which is true.
Lasted weeks. Anyhow, I'll tell you what people, what the internet officially says the most significant ones are coming up.
The Church of Laszlo. The Church of Laszlo.
On 98.9 The Rock. KQRC Leavenworth, Kansas City's rock station. Always live on the Free Odyssey app.